Bible, high-speed DSL, dial-up, web hosting, shell access, and more. For information, the number is 503-240-8200 or www.spiritone.com. KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from locally owned Spirit One Internet Services, offering reliable high-speed DSL, dial-up, web hosting, shell access, and more. For information, the number is 503-240-8200 or www.spiritone.com. Good morning. Good morning, this is the KBOO Morning News for Friday, January 20th, 2006. I'm Chris Andre.
I'm Jim Thompson. Coming up on the KBOO Morning News, professors from Oregon State University wish to withhold from Science Magazine a student's findings about wildfires and their effects on forests.
Increasingly more Democratic senators voice their opposition to Samuel Alito.
And Osama bin Laden warns of attacks on the United States.
Today's Portland area weather: rain in the morning, showers likely in the afternoon, highs 45 to 50. Tonight, mostly cloudy, chance of showers, lows 35 to 40.
A contingent of professors at Oregon State University's College of Forestry wants the nation's top scientific journal to withhold a study by an OSU graduate student who found that forests best recover from wildfires when they are not logged and left alone. The issue of the journal Science, including the study, is due out today, and Donald Kennedy, its top editor, said there is no chance the research will be suppressed. The OSU graduate student Daniel Donato led researchers in examining lands burned by the 2002 Biscuit wildfire in southwestern Oregon, where the Bush administration and others at OSU had promoted logging as a means of restoring forest quickly. Donato's team concluded logging slowed forest recovery. OSU's College of Forestry, which has close ties to the timber industry and receives about 10% of its funding from a tax on logging, was immediately and sharply divided. This is the latest step in an extraordinary dispute entwined in the heated politics of Northwest logging and spilling out from a normally quiet academia. Many professors aspire all their lives to publish research in Science, and for an OSU graduate student to do so is a rare achievement. Other scientists inside and outside OSU say they have rarely, if ever, heard of an attempt by professors to hold back such research. This is from the Oregonian.
City Commissioner Sam Adams announced the resignation of the top manager and public relations consultant on the budget-busting aerial tram between Oregon Health and Science University and the South Waterfront. Adams handed out a draft statement about 1 p.m. to the City Council, and the Oregonian headlined, "Adams continues to make changes on tram project management." Turns out he was wrong. Tram boss Vic Rhodes says he declined Adams' request. He had not resigned as of late Wednesday. He was backed by lobbying from influential developer and part owner of Rhodes Consulting Company, Homer Williams. Adams, the transportation commissioner, wrote the statement after a flurry of tram activity sparked by a January 12th report in the Oregonian. He's hustling to assure taxpayers that he has control of a floundering project that's become the butt of City Hall jokes. But his actions are the latest in a long line of missteps for a project that's tripled in price to $45 million in 2.5 years, thanks to an uncertain design, budget mistakes, and rising construction prices.
State lawmakers paved the way today for a lawsuit settlement over crowding at Oregon State Hospital in Salem. The Human Services Subcommittee of the Legislative Emergency Board unanimously approved $9.2 million in state emergency funds that will provide alternate facilities to relocate some patients and will add staff at the dilapidated hospital. The hospital houses mentally ill people, including some who have committed violent crimes. Oregon Advocacy Center, which represents people with disabilities, sued the state in federal court to reduce crowding. A January 31st court hearing is scheduled in Portland for the class action suit. But Bob Joondaff, executive director of Oregon Advocacy Center, said the subcommittee's action signals the lawsuit can be settled out of court. The full legislative emergency board, known as the E-Board, must formally ratify subcommittee actions on Friday. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
Federal agents have arrested two more people in the investigation into a string of Northwest arsons claimed by the shadowy group Earth Liberation Front and Animal Liberation Front. The FBI arrested Jonathan Paul at the Green Springs Inn outside Ashland yesterday. The complaint alleged he firebombed the Cavill West horse meat packing plant in Redmond in 1997 with an unnamed woman. Now, Suzanne Nicole India Savoy of Applegate has also surrendered to the FBI. The complaint charged she served as a lookout for the 2001 firebombing of Superior Lumber Mill offices in Glendale. The two suspects bring to nine the number of people charged in a series of arsons from 1996 to 2001 in Oregon and Washington. They include two lumber mill offices, a tree farm, an SUV dealership, and two federal research labs. Authorities have also linked two of the earlier suspects to a fire at the Vail, Colorado ski resort, but no one has been charged in that one. Out of the 7-4 being held without bail, one's free on bail, one committed suicide, and one remains a fugitive. According to an affidavit from FBI Special Agent Paul Caldwell, an unidentified informant involved in the horse meat packing plant fire told investigators that Paul and an unidentified woman set the blaze using 5-gallon plastic buckets filled with a mix of gasoline, diesel oil, and soap that were ignited by an electronic timer.
More than 117,000 children in Oregon lack health insurance, and the number is rising, according to a new study. The Oregon Health Science University study showed that children most likely to be without health insurance are low-income Hispanic teenagers 14 and older, whose families are just above the federal poverty level, and had one employed parent and one uninsured parent. Dr. Jen DeVoe, a family medicine researcher who led the study, said she heard many individual stories about the lack of health care for children. The statewide mail survey was based on completed forms returned by the parents of 2,681 children. Key findings include as many as 68,000 of Oregon's uninsured children may be eligible for publicly funded health coverage. Uninsured children were three times more likely to use the emergency department for routine care. Only one in three uninsured children visited a primary care provider in the past 12 months, and only one out of five uninsured children got necessary dental care. One in four low-income children had a health insurance coverage gap during the past year, and the longer the gap, the less likely the child was to have regular care.
U.S. consumer groups are to sue the network behind SpongeBob SquarePants, Viacom, and food company Kellogg's, accusing them of promoting junk food in their advertising to children. The Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, the Center for Science and the Public Interest, and two parents announced they intend to sue under consumer protection laws that apply in the state of Massachusetts. The alliance said using cartoon characters to sell products to children was a multimedia brainwashing and re-education campaign. The issue is also a hot topic in Britain, where food companies have massively increased their health food campaigns. The effort is a bid to stop the government introducing laws that ban junk food advertising to children. The U.S. government is considering a ban, too, and is due to decide later this year.
Google is resisting a White House subpoena to hand over the records of the searches Internet users are asking it to perform. This according to the U.K. Guardian. The request was made last summer, but when California-based Google refused to comply, the U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez lodged papers with a federal judge in San Jose to enforce the order. The White House argues that a list of all requests entered into its search engine over a single week will help it build up a profile of Internet use it needs to defend an online pornography law. It also wants a million randomly selectable addresses from the index of websites that Google searches. The papers said Google's search record would assist the government in its efforts to understand the behavior of current web users and to estimate how often web users encounter harmful to minors material in the course of their searches. The Bush administration insists it does not want to tie the search request to the person or computer that made them, but the subpoena has nevertheless raised serious privacy concerns.
According to the Washington Post, a procession of Democratic senators said yesterday that they will oppose the nomination of Judge Samuel Alito to the Supreme Court. They warned that Alito would not provide a judicial check against the expansion of presidential power or be properly vigilant about protecting the rights of ordinary Americans. The mounting Democratic opposition underscored the sharp partisan divide that's developed over Alito's nomination. But although Democrats appear increasingly united in their opposition to Alito, they remain divided over whether to pursue a filibuster against the nomination. A filibuster is increasingly less likely, Democratic strategists say, despite pressure from some liberal interest groups for Democrats to keep the option alive. But Democrats are more united in their desire to seek an extended floor debate over Alito, even as they acknowledge that his confirmation is virtually assured, because they believe polling shows that the more the American people learn about Alito's record and writings on civil liberties and other subjects, the more they'll oppose his addition to the high court. As Republicans coalesced around Alito, conservative organizations announced plans to aim radio and television ads at states carried by Bush in 2004 that are represented by at least one Democrat in the Senate. These states include North Dakota, South Dakota, Louisiana, and Arkansas. This from the Washington Post.
In Virginia, rescue teams searched early this morning for two miners who were unable to escape after a fire broke out in an underground coal mine. 19 miners were able to flee the blaze. The fire started Thursday evening on a conveyor belt at the Alma No. 1 mine operated by Massey Energy. This is about 60 miles southwest of Charleston. 12 miners had gone into the mine to start their shift when a carbon monoxide monitor sounded an alarm around 5:36 p.m. The monitor was located about 10,000 feet inside the mine and 900 feet underground. The miners encountered smoke, put on breathing gear, and rushed out of the mine, but two were separated from the group. Nine others in another part of the mine also escaped. This fire comes less than 3 weeks after an explosion at the International Coal Group's Sago mine in Upshur County killed 12 miners. The disaster's sole survivor remains hospitalized in a light coma.
A dispute between the owner of the Sago mine and the United Mine Workers has led both sides to refrain from sitting in on interviews by state and federal officials investigating this month's fatal explosion at the coal mine. A union official said neither its representatives nor those of International Coal Group attended interview sessions. Several miners have asked the union to serve as their representative during the investigation, and federal investigators have officially recognized the union as the miners' representative. The union and the company drafted a written agreement that says neither will participate in the interviews, but the union has not approved it. Investigators are trying to determine the cause of the explosion, which resulted in the deaths of 12 members of a 13-man mine crew. Survivor Randall McCoy continues to improve, but remains in a light coma. Democratic Governor Joe Manchin and Republican Representative Shelley Moore Capito said the union had a right to be at the interviews. Rescue teams from both union and non-union mines helped at the Sago mine. The governor said full-time rescuers should augment the current volunteer force and the rescue equipment.
Wilson Pickett, the soul music pioneer whose insistent wail turned songs like In the Midnight Hour into hits, died yesterday in Virginia at the age of 64. The cause was heart attack. Margot Lewis, his manager, said that Pickett had spent the twilight of his career playing dozens of concert dates a year, but had finally started an extended hiatus last year as his health began to worsen. Reflecting on his career years after his chart performance had begun to slip, Pickett said he had once harbored mixed feelings about abandoning his gospel roots, fearing that, quote, if you leave God and go to the devil, you're going to go to hell, as he told the Rolling Stone. You see, I wanted to sing gospel, but I wanted to make some money, too. This according to the New York Times.
Nearing a diploma, most college students cannot handle many complex but common tasks, from understanding credit card offers to comparing the cost per ounce of food. Those are the sobering findings of a study of literacy on college campuses, the first to target the skills of students as they approach the start of their careers. More than 50% of students at four-year schools and more than 75% at two-year colleges lack the skills to perform complex literacy tasks. That means they could not interpret a table about exercise and blood pressure, understand the arguments of newspaper editorials, compare credit card offers with different interest rates and annual fees, or summarize results of a survey about parental involvement in school. The results cut across three types of literacy, analyzing news stories and other prose, understanding documents, and having math skills needed for checkbooks or restaurant tips. Overall, the average literacy rate of college students is significantly higher than that of adults across the nation. Study leaders said that was encouraging but not surprising, given that the spectrum of adults includes those with much less education.
A lawsuit about notifying New Orleans homeowners regarding the possible demolition of their properties was settled in court this week. The city of New Orleans has agreed to send notices by mail and post public announcements before destroying any homes. Christian Roseland reports.
Kirk v. City of New Orleans was settled before U.S. District Court Judge Martin Feldman on Tuesday with little media attention. The city agreed to mail a notice to the last known address of a homeowner who has 7 days to appeal the demolition by writing the city. The city had begun clearing the remnants of homes out of streets in the city's lower Ninth Ward in late December after giving notice on Christmas Eve. Demolition was stopped by residents and community organizers who in one instance physically occupied a site being bulldozed. Brandon Darby, an organizer with the Common Ground Collective, a plaintiff in the case, says that the city only agreed to a process that it was required to follow all along.
So this victory in the courts is not a victory at all. Like, they've always had to tell owners. You know, the city must ask owners. That sounds like what we need to see, not city must tell owners.
The city plans to start mailing notices out this week, and demolitions are scheduled to begin again in early February. For FSRN, I'm Christian Rowe.
Vice President Dick Cheney is defending the Bush administration's domestic surveillance program. Cheney says it's an essential tool in monitoring al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations. But Cheney stressed that the program was limited and conducted in a way that safeguarded civil liberties. Four Democrats in a letter to the vice president asked that the administration consult with all members of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees on the program. The administration so far has restricted notification to just 8 lawmakers. Cheney said the surveillance program had addressed a concern of the September 11th commission that the government had difficulty linking the activities of domestic and international terrorists. The program has come under heavy criticism by congressional Democrats and civil libertarians and is now the focus of at least 2 federal lawsuits. Cheney said Bush had reauthorized the program more than 30 times since 2001 and would continue to do so. Also yesterday, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez sent congressional leaders a 42-page legal defense of warrantless eavesdropping, expanding on arguments that he and other administration officials have been making since the program was first disclosed last month.
And here's more on that from the Raw Story. In a detailed 42-page legal memorandum set for release this evening, the Bush Justice Department will defend the president's warrantless wiretap program as legal. A copy of the document was leaked to Raw Story. Justice Department lawyers write, quote, "The NSA activities are supported by the president's well-recognized inherent constitutional authority as commander-in-chief and sole organ for the nation in foreign affairs to conduct warrantless surveillance of enemy forces for intelligence purposes to detect and disrupt armed attacks on the United States." The statement adds, "The president has the chief responsibility under the Constitution to protect America from attack, and the Constitution gives the president the authority necessary to fulfill that solemn responsibility." The first 2 pages are shown below with a PDF link to the document beneath, but I don't think that applies. Chris, over to you.
Airline passengers who buy a pre-approved security pass could have their credit histories and property records examined as part of the government's plan to turn over the Registered Traveler program to private companies. The Registered Traveler card would let frequent flyers go through airport security lines more quickly if they pay a fee, pass a government background check, and submit 10 fingerprints. The program will begin June 20th. Transportation Security Administration Chief Kip Hawley has said the program's benefits could include passengers not having to take their shoes or coats off or removing their laptops from their cases. The program is intended to let frequent air passengers avoid delays and to free up security screeners to focus on other travelers. The TSA already has tested registered travelers at 5 airports beginning in the summer of 2004 through September of 2005. Now it wants private companies to run the program, which was popular with frequent travelers.
A Cincinnati legislator's bill to ban abortion in Ohio drew widespread support here Wednesday from a dozen groups eager to trigger a review of Roe v. Wade by what they see as an increasingly conservative U.S. Supreme Court. This from the Columbus Inquirer. At a State House news conference marking this week's 33rd anniversary of the landmark 1973 decision, opponents called on the Ohio General Assembly to debate a bill banning all abortions. House Bill 228 would make it a felony to carry out abortions or transport a woman across state lines to have one. It would allow abortions only to save the life of a mother. Nancy Keenan, president of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, warned that anti-abortion advocates are, quote, using the states as laboratories in their efforts to overturn Roe. Indiana, too, is considering a ban on abortions, and other states are adding restrictions to when abortions are allowed.
After years of silence, the father of alleged Taliban member John Walker Lind called on President Bush to grant clemency to his son. Frank Lind said that although his son had nothing to do with the 9/11 attacks, he added dire consequences to his decision to join the Taliban. John Walker Lind, who turns 25 next month, was 20 when he was captured by American forces alongside Taliban fighters. Until now, his parents have mostly maintained a public silence about the case, hoping to avoid a media barrage that could be detrimental to their son. But yesterday, Franklin shared baby pictures and other photos of his son during the presentation and said he's proud of his child. Franklin said he decided to break his silence because he hoped the story of his boy's journey from bucolic Marin County to harsh Afghanistan battlefields will help him get a reduction in his 20-year prison sentence. Last year, his son renewed his request for clemency, already rejected once. In the spring of 2001, John Walker Lind told his parents he was going to dodge the desert heat and spend the summer in the mountains of Pakistan. He did not tell his parents that he planned to cross into Afghanistan and join the Taliban army. Frank Lind emphasized that John Walker Lind was involved in an Afghan war, not a fight against the U.S.
A global rise in the surface temperatures of oceans can have a devastating effect on plankton and marine life in general. This according to a recent study published in the scientific journal Nature. The microorganisms convert carbon dioxide to carbon, thereby helping to curb the effects of global warming. However, scientists found that higher surface temperatures can rob plankton of the nutrients needed to survive. In addition to its vital role in the carbon cycle, plankton forms the basis for the marine food chain. Scientists warn that its endangerment could have far-reaching implications for life on this planet.
The Vatican newspaper has published an article labeling as correct the decision by a judge in Pennsylvania that intelligent design should not be taught as a scientific alternative to evolution. The article was not presented as an official church position, but in the subtle and purposely ambiguous world of the Vatican, the comments seemed notable given their strength on a delicate question much debated under the new Pope Benedict. Advocates for teaching evolution hailed the article.
As the January 25th Legislative Council elections near, Palestinian candidates and parties are reporting incidents of harassment by Israeli forces. Menard Gibran reports from the West Bank.
Palestinian candidate Bassam Salhi, Secretary General of the Palestinian People's Party, was detained today for several hours by Israeli troops upon his arrival from Jordan to the Gaza Strip. In East Jerusalem, Israeli policemen stormed in a press conference by candidates from the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine yesterday and detained seven candidates, charging that campaigning in Jerusalem is not allowed. Soldiers also broke into a Hamas campaigning center in Jerusalem and arrested Mohammed Abu Tayr, one of three Hamas candidates, along with seven others. These arrests come just days after Israeli Knesset voted to allow Jerusalemite Palestinians to participate in the coming elections. The approved measure permits campaign activities of all Palestinian parties except Hamas. For FSRN from IMEMC.org in Palestine, I am...
Japanese stocks ended flat today after a turbulent week in which the market plunged amid jitters over criminal probes into prominent internet company Livedoor. The market plunged nearly 6% on Tuesday and Wednesday as investors fretted over an expanding investigation into possible fraud at Livedoor, an internet startup that has grown by buying up dozens of other companies. The Tokyo market was forced to close early for three straight days due to surging trading volume. Next week, the Japanese Stock Exchange will increase trading capacity to 5 million transactions from the current 4.5 million in an effort to avert the chaos seen this week.
Also in Japan, the agriculture minister recommended a total halt to American beef imports if officials confirm a recent U.S. meat shipment contained material considered at risk for mad cow disease. The threat to close the doors to U.S. beef came just a month after Japan partially lifted a two-year ban on American imports. That ban was imposed in 2003 following the discovery of mad cow in the U.S. herd. The report was prompted by the discovery of suspicious materials in U.S. beef at Narita International Airport outside Tokyo. The beef could have contained pieces of cattle backbones. That would violate terms of an agreement allowing American beef back in the country.
Osama bin Laden broke his 13-month silence yesterday when a new audio tape gave warning of impending attacks on the U.S., but offered Americans a long-term truce if they stopped fighting Muslims on Muslim land. Al Jazeera, which broadcast the poor-quality recording, said it appeared to have been made in December. Last night, the CIA said the tape was genuine, confirming that it was the first sign of life from the leader of the Al-Qaeda network since an audio recording in December of 2004. The voice sounded weak. There has been growing speculation about the fate of bin Laden, who's been rumored to be ill or dead for months. The release of the recording may be an attempt by Al-Qaeda to show that it has not been weakened by last week's airstrike on a remote Pakistani village. Pakistani officials said four or five senior Al-Qaeda figures were killed alongside 13 villages or more. Bin Laden said that he was ready to offer the U.S. the truce in response to opinion polls showing that Americans were weary of the war in Iraq. Not everyone believes that the audio tape was genuine, coming as it does just before Bush's State of the Union speech.
That was the KBOO Morning News for Friday, January 20th, 2006. Portland area weather, today, rain in the morning, showers likely in the afternoon, highs 45 to 50. Tonight, mostly cloudy, chance of showers, lows 35 to 40. Saturday, mostly cloudy, chance of showers in the morning, a chance of rain in the afternoon, highs around 45 to 35. Mostly cloudy in the morning on Sunday, then partly sunny, areas of fog in the morning, highs around 45, lows around 35. Thanks for joining us for this morning's news. This newscast was edited by Becca Bartleson and Chris Andre. Our engineer is Becca Bartleson. KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Jim Thompson.
And I'm Chris Andre.
At 7:30, it's Positively Revolting Talk Radio with Chris Andre and Melody Silverwolf. At 9, Marlena Smith hosts her Electronic Salon. Her guest is Ed Goldberg on politics and culture. At 10, it's a special rebroadcast of this month's Ubu Hour with the satirical studio drama The Torturer's Apprentice. And at 11, Democracy Now! Stay tuned for the KBOO Evening News at 5 p.m. Would you like to help with the morning news? KBOO needs volunteers to help getting important stories like these out to you, the listeners. Please contact us at amnews@kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 202. This is KBOO, your community radio station in Portland on 90.7 FM, K264AA in Corvallis at 100.7, and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. Have a lovely weekend.